Engaging presentations on the most urgent problem of our day and what you can do about it.
Now, the End Abortion Podcast by Priests for Life.
Radio Maria, Christian Voice in Your Home. We're now presenting the show, Gospel Live, Prayer Life Issues.
Well, good evening, brothers and sisters. This is Janet Morana, the Executive Director of Priests for Life. I also co-founded the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, which is the largest mobilization of women, men, and families who have been hurt by abortion, who have been healed, and now speak publicly about their regret. Of course, Father Frank is not joining us this evening. As always, the Flying Father is someplace. But of course, I'm coming to you from our beautiful radio studio here in our main Priest Life headquarters in Titusville, Florida. And for those listening that live in Florida, if you haven't been by to see us, we would love to welcome our Radio Maria listeners to our headquarters here in Florida. As always, we look to any questions you might have. Please, you can call us at 866-333-6279. And also, there's a special announcement I have for you this evening from Radio Maria. And this is really a great opportunity. So, brothers and sisters, Radio Maria will have a special day of prayer and healing on Monday, February 11th, which is the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. If you know someone who is in need of healing, whether physical or spiritual, you are to call now at the following number, toll-free, 888-408-0201, or you can go to their website at radiomaria.us and tell them who you want prayers for. There's no limit to the number of prayer intentions you can make. Every person will be remembered at Mass and also during each of the rosaries and special prayers that day, as well as Radio Maria's Masses during the entire month of February. So I want you to call now the special number, 888-408-0201, again, or go online, radiomaria.us, and please give them your prayer intentions. And this is a wonderful opportunity. I think I'm going to be calling and giving them some of my prayer intentions, so please do that. Well, as always, we'd like to begin our program with a prayer, very appropriate that I'm bringing that up right now. It comes from the beautiful devotional that Father Pavone wrote called Pro-Life Reflections for Every Day. And today we have a quote that comes from the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 17, verse 28. And it says, "We are all his children. Abortion has killed children who may have been scientists, doctors, and inventors. Yet every life taken by abortion is equally valuable. People do not derive their value from how productive or famous they are. The most obscure and humble life has as much intrinsic value as many human rights and as the most notable personalities in history." Let us pray. Lord, I cannot begin to imagine the plans you had for each aborted child. May we realize more deeply the value of each one of them, even the most humble and forgotten. Amen. And again, brothers and sisters, the beautiful devotional called Pro-Life Reflections for Every Day, written by Father Frank Pavone. I'd like to offer that as our gift to you, our Radio Maria listeners. Just send Janet a simple email at info@gospeloflife.com. I'll send it to you as a special gift to add to your daily prayer life. And of course, don't forget to call Radio Maria with your prayer intentions from this special day they're having on Monday. And that phone number again is 888-408-0201. Well, joining me this evening on the program, we're going to have a few special guests, but our first one is a dear friend of ours and part of our Priest for Life family and ministries, is Kevin Burke, and he's the co-founder of Rachel's Vineyard, and of course, as like I said, a pastoral team member and the leader of the Fatherhood Initiative for the Silent No More Awareness Campaign. Kevin, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Dan.
Glad to have you. Well, Kevin, you know, you, first of all, for our listeners, you've been on the program before, but, you know, you and your wife, Dr. Teresa Burke, basically, the way I co-founded Silent No More with Georgette Forney, you co-founded Rachel's Vineyard with your wife, Teresa Burke. Just tell us a little bit about what was that like in those, you know, beginning years of, you know, Teresa first realizing the need for this healing from abortion and the role you played.
Sure. Well, Teresa was at graduate school for psychology, getting her master's. And one of her field placements was at a clinic for women with eating disorders. And a large number of the participants had abortions, but she really didn't quite know how to help them. And the psychiatrist who was supervising her said, "I forbid you to deal with this issue.
Wow.
It has nothing to do with their symptoms." And, of course, that psychiatrist was very influential in making Teresa have this be her life's vocation.
Right. Well, basically, when she said to Teresa, "Don't speak about this again," Teresa goes,
Yeah, right.
This is a challenge.
You didn't know Teresa very well.
Yeah. And also, too, didn't Teresa have a deep devotion to... Who was it?
To Our Lady. I mean,
Our Lady.
The Blessed Mother. Yeah.
The Blessed Mother, and also too, she also had a deep attachment too to Mother Teresa, wasn't that it?
Yes,
too?
Mother Teresa, and I think the charity, the love, the heart, and I think people who have experienced Teresa, who've been blessed to be working with her as colleagues in ministry, and or have been ministered to her in Rachel's Vineyard, have really pointed out that she has this really powerful love that they experience. Not only, but she's also very skilled in her in as a counselor as well. But her heart and her spirit, I think, is very much in the spirit of Mother Teresa.
Right. Yeah. And, of course, you know, the Rachel's Vineyard Retreat, we've discussed this before in our programs. But, you know, brothers and sisters, I think, you know, everyone knows someone who's had an abortion. And very often, a lot of your friends and family members and acquaintances who've had an abortion, you sit there saying, you know, how come they're not back in church, or how come they haven't gone through healing, and, you know, what can I do? What advice would you give to someone right now listening, Kevin, who somehow has a cousin or a friend or someone who they know they had an abortion, and yet they can see possibly, first of all, that they're not going to church, or they go occasionally, you know, Christmas and Easter, but that's it. It's almost like they're upset or they're afraid to go to church. And then this friend doesn't even know how to broach the subject with them. It's like they can see it plain as the writing on the wall, like, my friend needs help, or my sister, or my cousin. But what do I do? What would you say to them?
I'm assuming that there's a level of trust there, because if the person has shared at some point that, look, I had an abortion in my past, well, then I would say as a friend or as a relative, look for that time when, you know, the person is in a good place and you're in a good situation where you can open up something that's sensitive like that. And then once you introduce it, you could do something. You know, I heard a radio show the other day. I was listening, and the speakers were talking about how people who have an abortion in their past, how it impacts their life,
right,
and some of the symptoms. And you know, I just want to say it with you, I want to say how much I love and care about you. And I wonder if it would be helpful for you to learn a little bit more about this.
Right.
You can give them a pamphlet from either Silent No More has some good pamphlets.
And so does Rachel's Vineyard.
Rachel's Vineyard,
yeah.
And our websites. I mean, there's just tons of information. Testimonies also are a very powerful way to educate yourself before you talk to someone.
Right.
I would recommend that. And then for the person that you're helping out, they can also look at testimonies.
Yeah,
make sense?
That's right. Yeah, and, you know, very often, Kevin, I hear this from, you know, because Silent No More, of course, we get them when they stumble upon us and say, well, you know, I had my abortion, here's all my details, but I need help. And then we assist them in getting to Rachel's Vineyard. But, you know, what I find is sometimes in those stories, when they're first contacting us, they say, well, yeah, I went to confession, and the priest forgave me, of course, and now I'm back, you know, going to church, but I'm still struggling. Mm-hmm. And I think what it is they can accept the fact that God has forgiven them through the sacrament of reconciliation. But the harder step is forgiving yourself. Wouldn't you say that, Kevin?
Yeah, I think there's the step from the head to the heart sometimes is a long journey.
Right.
You can hear that you're forgiven. I think to experience that in your heart, and I think the reason for that is that if you really need to go through a grieving process,
right,
to unpack that experience and to deal with those emotions. And as Teresa says, when you empty the heart of that grief and the pain and some of the anger and the feelings associated with that, it makes room for grace. So you can really, you know, absorb that grace more fully into your life, and it's integrated more into your life.
Right. And, you know, Kevin, as we both know, we both have facilitated on Rachel's Vineyard Retreats, mm-hmm, and assisted them. And again, brothers and sisters, you're listening, and you're listening, of course, to Kevin Burke, co-founder of Rachel's Vineyard, Pastoral Associate of Priests for Life. And we're just kind of talking about this whole healing process. So when you said, you know, they have to grieve, that's kind of what Teresa has developed, isn't it? Because They come. The retreats, by the way, brothers and sisters, start on a Friday evening, and they conclude on a Sunday around lunchtime. There's a mass in the morning. And so when you enter in there, when the people come on Friday night, I think, right, they're afraid. They don't know what they're getting in for. They kind of have accepted, okay, I want help, but they're really you see a bunch of frightened-looking people on Friday night. But as they enter the process, one of the things I think is so beautiful is Teresa Burke has developed what she calls living scriptures. And they're very sensory-based, aren't they, Kevin, where they'll do the scripture. One of the scriptures they do is a blind Bartimaeus. They do one where you ask Jesus, you know, for help. And they say, you know, no, I'm here, I'm calling you, and it's okay, and all this. It's really beautiful the way Teresa has taken psychology, you know, all her skills there, and then looked at the scriptures and has pulled out some key scriptures. And like we said, it's so sensory-based. I think for me, one of the most, because I went through the retreat process before I assisted, was when on Friday night they give you a rock. There's a pile of rocks. Everyone gets to pick a rock. And you have to hold on to that rock all through the retreat until you're ready to let go of your pain and your grief. And you know, it's a very real symbol, isn't it, Kevin, that whole thing of carrying this, because it's been buried so much, this pain and anguish. But the fact of dragging this rock around, I mean, you take it to dinner, you take it to bed, you take it into the bathroom, you take it into the shower. I mean, you have this rock until you're finally going through the process of healing and say, yeah, Lord, I'm going to trust in you now. And you're going to be the one to help me through this grief and this healing. And I'm going to grieve this child. And, yes, I'm ready to let go of this burden. Because isn't that what it is, Kevin, of letting go of the burden?
It's funny, you know, the rock, such a simple thing. A lot of people say it's one of the more powerful aspects of the retreat for them. And it works off of the woman. The living scripture is one where the woman is caught in adultery.
Right.
And so you go through that. Women and men go through that. And you look at where you would be in that scene. But part of that is taking that rock and speaking out loud, what does that rock represent?
Right.
Because people are silent for so long and isolated in their pain. And they learn through the retreat weekend how to, to express those painful feelings and emotions, and through the grace of God, and this is the psychology working with the spiritual, because apart from Christ's salvation, you don't get that full ability to let go, you know,
right.
But you can let go of that rock by the end of the weekend. It's very beautiful.
Well, and you know, Kevin, it's so often with silent and warm, we're out doing media and stuff, the other side, the media always asks us, why in all these testimonies do the women always talk about Jesus Christ? Why do we keep hearing Jesus Christ? What's all this religion stuff have to do with the healing from abortion? And I always say, it's only the Lord God himself that can heal and free you from committing that sin of abortion, because you've destroyed your own child, and only the Lord can fix that. I don't care how many psychiatrists of the American, the American Psychiatric Association, or how much drugs you put a push person on, that's not going to heal them from this. It's only through the Lord. And I think with the Rachel's Vineyard, what Teresa has done is she's married those two worlds, the sacred and the psychology together. And so they kind of go through that, don't they?
Yeah, the process of the retreat, the child becomes human, becomes
right.
Real. And but you can't do that before you have a chance to really deal with the pain and the anxiety and the anguish and tell your story. Like those, again, the brilliance of the process is the steps that lead you and prepare you for the next stage of your healing.
Right.
But part of that healing journey is embracing the humanity and unique personhood of that child,
right.
Which is a very beautiful pro-life message, isn't it?
That's right.
And then the spiritual aspect of that is that child still lives in the Lord, and God willing, we have an opportunity to be united with them in this life spiritually, in
right.
Love, and with the hope of seeing them in eternity. And that's a very powerful healing aspect of the experience.
You know, and that comes directly from the Gospel of Life, St. John Paul II, in paragraph 99, when, you know, women still ask, what happened to my baby? Is my baby in heaven? And I think that paragraph 99 of the Gospel of Life encyclical, where they say, the Pope said in the encyclical, we entrust them the Lord. So women will still say, well, does that mean they're in heaven? No. Well, probably, but we're not going to write down on a document here, but we're entrusting the Lord Jesus Christ, who's all-merciful, who wants us to all be reconciled to him. We entrust those children to him, don't we? And I think that's an important fact.
With sure hope.
With sure hope, right.
And I think if you do enough retreats, as I have and you have as well, you realize that there's something that's happening that that's supernatural.
Right.
They are encountering their child and are very well with that child is alive in the Lord. How that all happens in eternity, we'll leave that in the Lord's hands.
That's right. We'll find out one day, I guess. You know?
We hope.
You know, it always reminds me of that saying about Henry Hyde, the famous congressman who was such a pro-life advocate. And there was a thing that when he goes to heaven, you know, when he dies, when he gets there, that all the babies are going to be there to greet him that were aborted to say, welcome, you know, Congressman Hyde, you know, and welcome to all of us, you know, who have worked so hard through all our pro-life work, that those children will be welcoming all of us, right? So, but anyway, so people listening, I want you to realize that, you know, the Rachel's Reading Retreat, obviously we're focusing right now on the women, but then I'm going to ask Kevin now to comment also on the fathers. And then we're going to talk about other people, too, who will come on these retreats. But let's talk about the men for a minute. Because, you know, Kevin, I find with the men, first of all, there's a double-edged sword for them. There's the guys who just said, here, do what you got to do. Take care of it. Here's the money. You know, you got to get rid of this baby. I'm not ready to be a dad. So those that group. But then there's the men who wanted to be the dad, but Roe v. Wade gives them no standing, no right, and sometimes some men I know find out years later that their girlfriend went and had an abortion. They didn't even know she was pregnant. And so talk to us a little bit about this two-sided thing for the guys.
Sure. It's interesting because we had a man at the March for Life who gave his testimony at the Supreme Court with the Silent No More Awareness Campaign, Chuck.
Right.
And I guess his testimony is probably up now on the website. And Chuck is interesting because he has two abortions in his history, one where he was very much you know, responsible, or at least partially responsible for the abortion, he felt tremendous shame about that. And in the second abortion, he felt like I have a second chance. Well, the second pregnancy, he felt I have a second chance now. I'm going to embrace fatherhood. You know, he from his experience of abortion, he desperately wanted to not abort his
second child,
girlfriend to abort, and it really was tragic because he tried everything. I mean, he begged for the life of his child, and it was very traumatic for him. When the child was lost, it is a very serious psychological trauma for a man,
right,
when he's powerless to stop that abortion, and you need help right away.
Well, when you think about it, you know, men, you know, the way everyone's DNA, you know, God made men to be the protectors of women. I mean, that's kind of like why Adam failed Eve, right, in the garden, because, you know, here he was there with Eve as the protector. He let the serpent in. He let her unprotected off in the garden. The serpent got to her. And where was Adam? I always want to know. Where was he? On a coffee break somewhere, drinking a beer under a tree?
Playing golf.
Who knows? But this is the thing of the men. You're supposed to be the protectors. I mean, the greatest model to look at is St. Joseph, who was the protector of the Holy Family. And so they have no standing, these guys. You know, they could try to stop that girl, and they can't.
In my book on men abortion, Tears of the Fisherman.
Right.
One of the chapters is called The Silence of Adam.
Wow.
And, you know, part of that is that, you know, so many abortion decisions are very much a reenactment of the experience in the Garden of Eden, where Eve's facing a very serious time of temptation, and she's encountering this diabolical force of evil, very cunning serpent-like creature. And as you said, you know, Adam was not there.
But
in some abortion decisions, the man pushes the woman into the serpent's arms.
He does.
And he feels tremendous anguish later about that, or what we hope and pray he does, because
right,
part of the journey of repentance.
Yeah, well, you know what it is, Kevin, too? It's the response that guy makes initially to the girl, to the woman, to the girlfriend, whatever. I mean, as soon as he says, I'll support you in whatever you want to do, that's an abortion-minded response, isn't it? Because she is there, pregnant and scared, probably. She's telling him, hey, you know, honey, I'm pregnant. Now what? Whatever you want to do. Well, that means that there's an option to have an abortion. Instead, guys, step up to the plate and say, hey, okay, well, we weren't planning on having a baby right now, but it's an unexpected blessing, and I'll be here for you. We'll get through this together. You're a strong woman, and I'm a guy. I'm going to be here for you, honey. And
we're already parents.
We're already parents. I'm a dad. You're a mom. And let's do this.
And there's the baby.
And there's the baby. Let's do this. You know, guys, think about what I just said. Your response in those first few seconds from your girlfriend, from your wife, could make all the difference in her saying, he really does love me and my child, and we can do this together, no matter what the circumstances. I mean, you know, sadly, Kevin, on the Selling Women website, there's testimonies from women who were married and had several children already and got pregnant maybe with number 4 or 5, and their husband told them, oh, we can't have any more children, and you're either having that abortion or I'm out of here. These are real stories. So, you know, man, your response could be life or death for your child in those first response, right, Kevin?
Yeah, and it could be very subtle. You know, I don't know. You know, I'm changing jobs. I don't know if this is a good time.
Good time.
But it's up to you.
It's up to you. Whatever you think.
That's the Garden of Eden right there.
Yeah, a wishy-washy response is basically signing the death certificate for your child, your unborn child. It really isn't, it, right? So, Kevin, you just mentioned your book, Tears of the Fisherman. Brothers and sisters, if you have not gotten a copy of this book, it is amazing. It will open your eyes to how deeply damaged the guys are. We all feel the women are deeply damaged, but I don't think you realize how deeply damaged abortion has done to our men and our society. And I highly recommend the book to you. You can send me an email, info@gospellife.com. I would love to send you a copy of Kevin's book, and he'll even autograph it for you. So info@gospellife.com. Just send me your address, and I'll send a copy of Tears of the Fisherman for you. We'd love to do that. And you know, Kevin, what I said was it greatly affects the men in our society. You've done a lot of work with the prison ministry, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the fact is a lot of men in prison, and you can tell our listeners a little bit about this, have experienced abortion. And this is a connector to the violent crimes they've committed and why they're in prison. So speak to that a little bit for everybody.
Sure. And there's a chapter on this in Tears of the Fisherman devoted to prison ministry, what we're learning. A lot of these men have father loss, abuse, neglect in their childhood. They're then involved in an abortion decision or abortion decisions later in life. And we look at how the experience of their childhood trauma combines with their role in participating in the death of their unborn child, and it contributes to them descending into criminal activity. Now, obviously, not every man who has an abortion. Most men who have abortions don't get in criminal activity.
Right.
But some men are more vulnerable to that.
Right.
And abortion just is like setting the spark to a flame for some of these guys.
Right.
That's what they – and again, they taught me that.
It's lighting the fuse to the stick of dynamite, basically.
It is.
But
the healing that takes place in these men's lives and the restoration of their fatherhood with any living children, it's beautiful to see the light that's shining in these prisons from these men reconciling of their abortion losses.
Well, and we do have a Rachel's Vineyard retreat team, as I know, in Florida. There's a maximum security prison. Like, these guys are lifers. They're in for life.
A lot of them are, yeah.
A lot of them are. They've murdered people. I mean, we're talking hardcore stuff.
Yeah.
And I know Donna Gardner of the Rachel's Vineyard Ministry, she has developed a whole Rachel's Vineyard team now that the prisoners who've gone through the healing are now part of the team healing fellow prisoners.
Absolutely, yeah. There's some great guys. There's one guy in particular whose testimony is in my book, and he's really a saintly guy now. And he was a murderer.
Yeah.
He really had lost his way.
Like a hardened criminal is what
he was. He was. It's a very much a St. Paul story, though, because he is in a priestly presence. Now, he can't be ordained, obviously, but he's a priestly presence as a layman in that prison environment now. And a big part of that was his Rachel's Vineyard experience.
Yeah, and again, he's a gentleman who is serving a life sentence.
He's there for life,
and now he's turning all this around and helping fellow prisoners.
They seek him out.
He's
because of his holiness.
Yeah, that's amazing. So again, brother, this is Kevin's book, Tears of a Fisherman, info@gospellife.com. Shoot me an email. I'd love to get a copy to you. It's a powerful book that has all these stories that Kevin and I are talking about are in this book, and maybe you know someone who's, you know, been involved in an abortion, a guy, and he's not dealing with this. This will be a great resource for him to eye-opening to see, well, you know, that abortion I had with that girlfriend back in college has affected me, and I haven't dealt with it. And, you know, once they deal with it, Kevin, I mean, come on, we've both seen this on the retreats, both of the men and the women. It's life-changing. I mean, they come in, like we just said on Friday, downcast and looking down, afraid to make eye contact. And Sunday, they're like joyful. They're like the burden and the rock's gone, and they're uplifted. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. The harvest is just it's plentiful.
Right.
You know, there's a tremendous possibility. When men are healed of this loss, it's just it's tremendous hope for the church and for our society for that restoration of their fatherhood.
Yeah. Well, also, too, Kevin, we're going to. You know what? We're going to take a break. I'm going to ask you to stay with me. Because, brothers and sisters, when we come back after this break, Kevin and I are going to talk about, okay, we talked about the women, we talked about the men, but there's a lot of other people involved in an abortion that need healing. We're going to talk about the shockwave effect of abortion. So stay with us right after this break. We'll be right back.
Our Lord tells us in the Gospels not to be concerned over questions like, what are we to eat or what are we to wear? He warns against worldly anxieties and commands us instead to seek first the kingdom of God. Worldly anxiety over our ability to provide for ourselves leads to many evils, including the temptation to abort one's children. The Lord's command to seek his kingdom first, therefore, is the key to saying yes to life. To put God's kingdom first means that choosing what is right is more important and central to us than calculating how much material security we'll gain or lose. It means the readiness to sacrifice to make room for God and for others, including those who are unplanned or inconvenient. It means always saying yes to life. This is Janet Miranda of Priest for Life on Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home.
The first commandment is, I am the Lord your God, and you shall have no other gods before me. There are many ways of having false gods. Pope John Paul II once wrote that to think we are the ones who decide whether a child should be created is to say that God is not God. At the root of the contraceptive mentality and at the root of the so-called pro-choice mentality is idolatry. We place our choices before God's choices. We break the first of all commandments. In the Old Testament, we read that God's people committed idolatry when they sacrificed their sons and daughters in the fire to demons. Until we end the child sacrifice of legal abortion, we are guilty of the same kind of idolatry. Let us worship the Lord of life.
I'm Evangelist Alveda King, Director of Civil Rights for the Unborn with Priest for Life on Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home.
Abraham is our father in faith. His name was originally Abram, which means exalted father. But God changed his name to Abraham, meaning father of many. God tells him when he is 99 years old that he will bear a son and be the father of many nations. The stars in the sky don't measure up to the number of descendants he will have. And it came to pass. His descendants include us, who inherit the same life of faith as he lived. This is a faith that affirms life, despite being confronted with the power of death. In Christ, we have seen the victory of life over death, and this faith enables us to declare that the power of abortion will come to an end, and the culture of life will prevail. This is Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life, on Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We're now back with the show, Gospel Live, Pro-Life Issues.
Well, welcome back, brothers and sisters. And before I continue my discussion with Kevin, I just want to remind you that Radio Maria will have a special day of prayer and healing on Monday, February 11th, which is the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. If you know someone who is in need of healing, whether physical or spiritual, call Radio Maria at 888-408-0201 or go to their website at radiomaria.us and tell them who you want prayers for. There's no limit to the number of prayer intentions you can make. Every person will be remembered at Mass and also during that day of each of the rosaries and special prayers that they will be having that day, as well as Radio Maria's Masses during the entire month of February. Please call them now at the toll-free number 888-408-0201, or again, you can go online at radiomaria.us. And Kevin, I mean, very powerful, right, to have this opportunity, like I said here, healing, physical or spiritual. And we know, like we were just talking about the pain of abortion, there's a real spiritual healing that has to take place, isn't there?
Yeah, it's really essential, absolutely essential part of that process.
Yeah. So now we've been talking about the women and the men. And, of course, you and I and Georgette Forney of Silent No More, all of us, Silent No More in 2015, we branched beyond the mother and the father. And we started to talk about the other people groups that are affected by abortion, which is healing the shockwaves. Because at the epicenter of every abortion is the death of that unborn child. And it reverberates out to the mother, to the father. But what about the grandparents? What about the siblings, the future siblings? What about the friends? What about the accomplices to that abortion? What about the doctors and the clinic workers themselves? So all of us, all of society has been affected by the death of that child. And so what we want to talk about right now is the other people group. So let's talk about the grandparents for just a moment. And, of course, like with the dads, with the grandparents, there's two sides of the coin. There's the grandparents who took their daughter off an abortion. So that they were taking their daughter for the abortion to kill their grandchild, you know. And so many of these, I think, grandparents did that because they really sincerely thought that was best for their daughter needed. They thought, you know, she's in college, she has her whole life ahead of her, this is no big deal, you know, it's so early on, what's the big deal? And here they take that young daughter of theirs off for an abortion. And then there's those grandparents, which is my case. You know, my daughter, Kelly, had an abortion, and I had no knowledge of it, none whatsoever. And even though she knew, I've always told, I had three daughters, I told them all, if this ever happens, please come to me. They see I'm involved in the pro-life movement. I'll be there for you no matter what, doesn't matter. I even said to Kelly, so why didn't you tell me? I didn't want to disappoint you. And since we've come out with the whole shockwaves, and I've spoken now about my daughter's abortion, I find there's a lot of people involved in the pro-life movement that have had the same experience.
Sure.
And, you know, I think very often we're afraid to talk about it. We're afraid of being judged. Like, oh, look at Janet. You know, she's on EWTN, and she's with Priest for Life. And, you know, everyone thinks we're living in this perfect little world, that everything involving us is just perfectly fine. No, we're all vulnerable, and at any time Satan slips in and does what he does, you know. And so for the grandparents, like I said, it's a double-sided coin. It's either those who didn't know at all and find out later that they've lost a grandchild, or those who actively participated in the death of that child. And so we're finding, Kevin, even grandparents now are coming on Rachel's visiting retreats, aren't they?
They are. And it was, when you shared your own personal loss in your family, I think that's, you were mentioning that it's hard sometimes for folks to face that or to speak about, but I think it's so important because somebody listening right now has that experience,
right,
that their son or daughter had an abortion. They didn't even know. They learned about it later.
Later.
Or they maybe they're wondering because they notice that, boy, my kid, all of a sudden his behavior started changing. He was 18 or 17 or
right.
23.
Yeah.
And they wonder if it could be related to them being involved in an abortion. So, yeah. They do beautiful. I have to say that they have a powerful experience as the mother and fathers do. And if you think about it, it makes total sense because if you have living grandchildren, mm-hmm. think about how much you love them, how much joy they bring to your life, how close you are to them.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes more so than your other kids. Because
you have grandchildren, Kevin, I have four. I think I'm beating you right now.
Yeah.
And their grandchildren are grand treasures, aren't
yes,
they? Grand
are.
Treasures. And, you know, let's tell you, ladies and gentlemen, I mean, there's nothing like grandchildren. It really is. It's very special. And, you know, now I have to say I have five grandchildren. I have four on earth and one hopefully in heaven, you know, from Kelly's abortion. And, you know, like I said, there's nothing like grandchildren. You know, what's great is, too, like when you're done playing and being the number one grandparent, then they go back with their parents, and you're okay again. you can spoil them. You can, you know, it's just wonderful. It really is.
And if you think about the joy of that bond, it's impossible for us not to be impacted if one of our kids
right.
Participates in the death of that child, or we participate in that.
The death of that child
as a grandparent. It's impossible for that not to hurt us because of the natural bond we have as grandparents with our grandchildren. So I think that's why Rachel's Vineyard welcomes grandparents to attend their retreats,
right,
with or without their child. It's not necessary, but if they
right.
can, together is wonderful.
Right.
But they can come and they can go through that process and grieve and deal with the feelings and pain mm-hmm. and anger and guilt and shame.
That's right.
And then also their hearts will be open to embrace their grandchild with love. And a lot of times that opens the door to healing in the family in different ways through God's grace.
It does, it does. Well, of course, we talked about grandparents now. And, of course, the next group are future siblings. And people don't even think about this. But, you know, when you've had an abortion and then, you know, years later you go on and you finally get married and you met Mr. White Wright and now you're going to have your own family. Well, first of all, if you haven't gone through healing for a mom, that affects your bonding with this child. Point one, so hopefully you go through healing. But then that child is now affected by the loss of that prior sibling. And people, you know, they scratch their heads and, oh, come on, how does that happen? Well, they just have to go to our website, abortiontestimony.com, and read some of these sibling testimonies, how these kids, they had this feeling that somebody was missing. They would have some of them dreams about this child. And physically, they always say that in the womb that there's some sort of, like, I don't know, cells or DNA remains physically from pregnancy to pregnancy. So there's something that happens there in the womb when we won't know 100%. But what we know is by the stories that we're getting now from siblings about, I told my mom that I knew there was someone always missing. The most striking example I have of this, Kevin, is Dr. Philip Nang, Canadian psychiatrist, has a family practice of psychiatry up in Canada. He's studied this abortion issue for 5 decades or more. One of the cases he told me about, and I think this is so striking, is he had a woman come to him that her child was wetting the bed, and this child was about 6 years old. So by 6 years old, we really shouldn't be wetting the bed anymore. So the mother was very upset, went to Dr. Nang, what can I do? So now he's got the child in one room with his assistant, and he's with the mom in another room. And the assistant asked, this is the only child, she's an only child. The assistant asked the child to draw a picture of their family. They'll kill time with the kid, draw the picture of your family. And so the kid draws mommy, daddy, herself, and 2 other children. Now the assistant gets alarmed by this because she knows this is an only child. Why are these other two children? And she asks the child, she goes, I see there's other children. Are those your friends, your playmates? And the kid says, no, that's my brother and sister. And they went, oh, okay, well, you're not going to say anything to the kid. Like, what, are you crazy? You know, you're an only child. So she takes the drawing. She goes, okay, I'll be right back. She goes into the drawing. She gets Dr. Nate's attention, shows Dr. Nate. So he goes, all right. So he takes the drawing. He has it face down. He's talking to the mom. He says to the mom, so tell me about your pregnancies, you know. And she gets her eyes, like she puts her head down. Her eyes well up with tears. And she raises her head, and she says, I had 2 abortions. Now, there were the 2 children that this child drew. So, of course, Dr. Nate continued then. They came in therapy for a couple of months, and they dealt with this where the mother was honest to the child, and the child there was feelings affirmed that this kid had this sense there was someone missing in her life. And within months of this therapy sessions weekly with Dr. Nave, the bedwetting went away, the nightmares went away, all the problems that this kid was having of fear, like, oh, it could be me, I have to measure up, there's someone missing, all went away. So this effect of the siblings we're finding, Kevin, is real. And they also, too, are invited to come on Rachel's Minute, aren't they?
Sure. If they're aware that they've lost a sibling to abortion, they want to come and grieve that loss and honor that child's life through the retreat process, they're more than welcome to come. Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. Now, of course, and there's another character category. Father Frank always says this phrase, friends don't let friends drive drunk, so friends should not take a friend for an abortion.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
So now this is a case where friends have a role. And, you know, brothers and sisters, you think about this. Did you participate by either what you said or didn't say in the death of an unborn child? And you need to come to grips with that, right, Kevin? And you have an experience yourself, don't you?
I do. It's one that I felt called to share recently at the March for Life with the Silent No More campaign. You know, so many abortion decisions that we'll hear the abortion stories, so many times there's a friend, a relative, who, as you said, and we use the word accomplice.
Right.
They're an accomplice in the child's death.
Right.
I had that experience myself. A relative came to me when I was in my 20s, and I was in graduate school, just starting graduate school, and she trusted me, and she wanted to get my advice. She was facing an unplanned pregnancy. And my response, unfortunately, this is before I got involved in Rachel's Vineyard and was pro-life and understood how abortion hurts people. I was pretty clueless. But, you know, my response to her was, look, I'll support you whatever you decide, which is really a death sentence for the child.
That's right.
You know, and yeah. what I should have done is what you said earlier, Janet, which is, this is an unexpected blessing.
Right. Yeah.
And let me go with you.
Let me see how I can help you.
Let me go with you to the Pregnancy Resource Center.
Right.
We'll look
exactly.
at what you're, because you have a number of options. You're a mother already.
That's right.
A wonderful mother. And perhaps you want to place a
child
for
adoption. And you're a strong woman. You can get through this.
You can get through this. And I'm going to support you. I'm going to be there for you.
Every step of the way.
And I did not do that.
Right.
And it grieves me. Still.
Still to this day.
It does. Yeah. I'm talking about it now. It breaks my heart that my response then. Now, it doesn't mean that I haven't had reconciliation and healing around that loss. I have.
Yeah.
But it still breaks my heart, as it should.
Right.
You know?
And so, for brothers and sisters, if you're listening to this and maybe you were involved, either by your silence, you know, because some people are complicit with an abortion because of silence.
Absolutely.
You know, maybe your roommate in college came home one night and said, guess what, I'm pregnant, and you just don't say a word. And she says, I think I'm going to have an abortion. And you don't even open your mouth to say, wait a minute, it's a baby. I always think of that movie, Juno, when the kid says, oh, your baby has 10 fingers and 10 toes, and its heart is beating, you know. So if you are silent, you were complicit in that abortion.
Yeah.
Or maybe you drove your friend for the abortion. Or maybe they needed them. I heard of one case, Kevin, where in a college dorm, a roommate went up and down the hall asking for money. Listen, I got to go. I have to get an abortion. I got to do this, like, next week. I don't have the money. I need $200 or $300, whatever it is. What can you give me? And a whole bunch of people in that dorm.
20 or 30 people contributed to that abortion.
To that abortion.
Yeah.
Well, if someone had spoken up and said, here's 20, here's 10, here's this, here's that, instead of handing over that 20 or 10, you said, wait a minute, you can do this. No, I'm not going to give you money for the abortion, but I'll help you. But instead, they were all accomplices, each and every one of those people that handed the 10 or the 20 towards that girl's abortion, right?
Yeah, a response, you're a mother.
You're a mother already.
You're already a mother.
You are a mom.
And if you take the life of this child, it's going to hurt you for the rest of your life.
Right. Yeah.
It's something you regret. And I giving life to this child, you may have challenges, but you won't regret giving life to this baby.
That's right. And you know how deeply this affects people? I know a story of there's a pro-life organization who has a donor that every year on the anniversary of their friend's abortion, they donate the exact amount of money that they gave their friend for the abortion to the pro-life group says to them, in reparation for the loss of a child to abortion.
Mm.
And I think it's like $300, you know. And every year they send the check, they date the check, the date of the abortion, the date of the death of that child.
Powerful witness.
And they mail it in every single year. Faithfully. And so what I'm trying to bring out here, Kevin, is that you may not realize, brothers and sisters, but a lot of people have been affected. That's why I say, well, it's Sound the More Awareness campaign. It's about the loss of, you know, men, women, and families and all of society to abortion. Because that's what we have to face up, don't we, Kevin? That all of society, all of us, even though if you think, well, no, I haven't had an abortion, and oh, no one in my family's had an abortion, I guarantee you there are people you know. I've done this at talks, Kevin, where I've said, okay, let's be honest here. Raise your hand. How many know someone who's had an abortion? Do you know just about every hand in the audience always goes up? And so what does that mean? All those hands that are raised? So the next question is, has that person found healing yet? And if not, what are you doing about it?
Yeah. And,
you know?
And the other question, of course, is what was your role in that?
What was your role? If any.
Yeah.
If any. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Oh, sure.
So, brothers and sisters, if you need to get healing for someone who you know has had an abortion, no matter what the level of the participation, like we just said, mother, father, grandparent, friend, accomplices, et cetera, just go to abortionforgiveness.com, abortionforgiveness.com. Put in your zip code, and you'll see where is the nearest Rachel's Vineyard retreat to you, right?
And other post-abortion healing.
That's right.
As well.
So, Kevin, I want to thank you for joining me this evening.
Oh, it was wonderful. Thank
and
you.
I want to remind everyone, Kevin's amazing book, Tears of a Fisherman. I'd love to send you a copy. Please send me an email at info@gospeloflife.com. So we're going to take a break right now. When we come back, I have another special guest we're going to be chatting with. So stay tuned after this break.
Abortion wounds everyone and everything it touches. In a disproportionate way, it wounds the black community, which, though constituting about 12% of the childbearing population, has about 36% of the abortions. This community is targeted by the abortion industry, which has been motivated by racism from its origins. In February, which is Black History Month, the Silent No More campaign is calling for a greater awareness of the abortion wound in the black community and a concerted effort of healing. Alveda King, niece of Martin Luther King Jr., is a full-time member of this campaign and has had abortions herself. She calls on her community to face up to the evil of abortion and rise above it by turning to the Lord of Life rather than to the abortionists. To learn more, visit abortionshockwaves.com. This is Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life on Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home.
Some people like to talk about the unborn child as a potential human life, but the word potential means that something may or may not develop into something else. The child in the womb does not develop into any other species than what he or she already is, and that's human. There is no record of an embryo or a fetus ever having changed species. The word potential here is misleading. Of course, the life in the womb has great potential to develop, for example, into a baseball player or an actress or a business owner or a priest. But as for being a human life, that child already has his or her own life and already has his or her own humanity. They are simply at an earlier stage on the spectrum of life than we are. This is Dr. Alveda King on Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home.
Today, I simply want to thank you for your commitment to the pro-life cause and tell you how much inspiration I receive from people just like you all over the country as I travel to spread the pro-life message. Whether you pray every day at home for an end to abortion, or show up at abortion mills to protest or to do sidewalk counseling, or speak before groups or write letters or lobby or counsel those tempted to abort or help those who have aborted find healing, the work of each and every person counts. We at Priests for Life want to hear more about what you are doing. Often we can share your ideas with others around the nation. Contact us through our website, priestsforlife.org. And again, thank you for your commitment. This is Father Frank Pavone, National Director of Priests for Life on Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home.
You're listening to Radio Maria, a Christian voice in your home. We're now back with the show, Gospel Live, Prayer Live Issues.
Well, welcome back, brothers and sisters. This is Janet Morena, Executive Director of Priests for Life. I just want to remind you of a wonderful opportunity. Radio Maria will be having a special day of prayer and healing this coming Monday, February 11th, which is the Feast of Our Lady of Lourdes. If you know someone who is in need of healing, whether physical or spiritual, call Radio Maria at their toll-free number, 888-408-0201, or you can go to their website at radiomaria.us. Tell them who you want prayers for. There's no limit to the number of prayer intentions you can make. Every person will be remembered at the Mass and also during each of the rosaries and special prayers that day, as well as Radio Maria's Masses during the entire month of February. So please call them now at their toll-free number, 888-408-0201, or again, you can go online, radiomaria.us, to give your prayer intentions for this great mega prayer event they're having this coming Monday, February 11th. And, of course, I'm going to be contacting them, too. I've got some prayer intentions that I want to also give them for Monday. Well, joining me now is another part of our pastoral team here at Priests for Life. His name is Brian Kemper. He's the founder of the Stand True Pro-Life Outreach of our youth outreach here at Priests for Life. He travels around the country and all over the world, activating and empowering the youth to be a passionate advocate for the unborn. Brian, welcome to the program this evening.
Thank you, Janet. It's always an honor to be here with you.
Well, of course, Brian, like I said, you're out there talking to the youth.
Yes.
And, of course, one of the things I know you talk to the youth about is the fact that, of course, they want to be chaste until they're married. But if they hear of a friend who gets pregnant, what they should do about that. Right?
Absolutely.
And you know, very often your response to your friend could be sending them towards that abortion or sending them to the pregnancy center for help. Right?
Oh, absolutely, Jenna. In many years that I've been going out to the abortion mills, I've talked to so many parents who are there because their child ends up pregnant and they don't know what to do, and they're more worried about maybe the shame or the stigma.
Yeah, what people are going to think, you know.
That they end up taking their teenage child to the abortion mill. And in college campuses, high school campuses, these girls are so afraid that that's where they think they have to turn.
Right. Well, Brian, I'd like you to share with our listeners. Recently, you've had a very personal experience. Tell us about it.
You know, Janet, like I said, I've talked to pastors, I've talked to fathers, I've talked to so many people that go to the abortion mill thinking that's the only way they have to turn and that they don't know how to answer their child, their daughter. And you know, I have seven children.
Right.
Amazing. You've met my children. They're wonderful children. My oldest daughter is 19 years old.
And the youngest is?
Six.
Okay, 6 to 19.
6 to 19. And recently, my daughter was in a hallway crying, and she looked up at me and she said, "Daddy, I'm pregnant." And Janet, she looked up at me and she said, "Daddy, are you mad at me?" And I said, "No, baby. I love you." And I'll tell you, when I first got trained in this pro-life movement, even before I met you and Father Frank, one of the first people to teach me this lesson was Judy Brown, American Life League, who talked about the first words out of your mouth need to be, "I love you."
That's right.
And so I just hugged her and I held her. I said, "Baby, you just made me a grandpa."
That's right.
I get to join the... Janet, you've talked about your grandchildren
so much.
We've had competitions when I've had my last baby or the last couple babies showing pictures.
Your youngest, Caroline, is the same age as my Lucas, grandson.
So we'd show pictures and you were talking about how the grandparents club is the greatest thing.
Yeah.
And I said, "Honey, you just made me a grandpa."
Right.
And I said, "You know what? I'm happy. I love you." And I you know, I spoke at the March for Life Youth Rally and all around this year, and I've said, pregnancy is not a sin.
Right.
Pregnancy is not a disease.
That's right.
Pregnancy is 100% always a blessing from God.
Right.
And that's what I had to do. And so I just hugged my daughter, and I said, "We're going to get through this." And I called you. and you gave me advice, and I took her to the local crisis pregnancy center.
And of course, these people knew you because
pictures on the wall.
You're Mr. Pro-Life out there in Dayton, Ohio. So of course, they knew. And you know what, Brian? I think it was very good that you did go there, because so often I think people who are involved in the pro-life movement feel shame. Then, like, how did I fail? What did I do? What are people going to think about me? That now my kid's pregnant, you know? And so I think that was a great move that you had the courage just to take your daughter and say, "You know what? She's pregnant. I'm here. Help us."
And what was amazing is I walked in, and I had just was with Father Frank the week before speaking at their banquet. So I walk in, and my daughter goes in the back, and they walk out, and they're like, "Brian," and they hugged me. And all the sidewalk counselors outside, Catherine Marple and Vivian and all of them, met my daughter with gifts, with baby clothes, with all this stuff. And there was zero shame.
Right.
There was zero judgment. And they welcomed my daughter. And they took such good care of her. And I got to see that first ultrasound, the first pictures of my granddaughter. By the way, I'm having a granddaughter.
Which I have to say, Brian, girls' clothes is so much better than buying boys.
Oh, yes.
Sorry, ladies and gentlemen.
So much cuter.
I have three granddaughters, one grandson. Although I love shopping for them all, the girls are more fun. Even when you go into the store, Brian, the section of the girls' clothes is so much bigger, and the boys are like, "Here," you know, kind of thing.
We were in D.C. recently, and, you know, my son and I got invited to the dinner with Vice President Mike Pence, and I had to go buy my son a shirt and tie and shoes, and there was this little selection. But I know with my little girls,
it's so much more fun.
It's so much easier. But
so, Brian, when is the baby due?
May 14th.
Oh, right around Mother's Day. How
yes,
appropriate.
Absolutely.
Well, of course, she's already a mother.
And her birthday is May 21st, so it's like right there.
And
it could be the same
have
day.
Have we selected a name for the baby?
Mia.
Ah, see? You know, but that's a very important thing, Brian, is that name the baby as soon as you can.
Yes.
Because now you start talking to Mia. I know with my grandchildren, my daughters all selected their names while they were pregnant, and I started talking to the babies, you know, hi, Lucas, it's Nana, hi, Vivian, hi, Evelyn, hi, Lily. I spoke to my grandchildren in utero, and I'm sure you're doing the same thing.
Oh, my daughter is a hostess at a local restaurant that me and my friends all go to. We hang out. The chef owner is a good friend of mine. I did social media for them. And so I always introduce everyone. This is my daughter, and this is my granddaughter.
Right.
And it's beautiful.
Well, brothers and sisters, I think this has been a beautiful program tonight because we talked about the pain of abortion, but now we talked about the joy of
yes.
that unexpected blessing. Put that words on your lips. If you hear someone who's pregnant and in need, please, how you react in those first few moments when you hear that news is the most important. You're going to love them. It's an unexpected blessing. And you're going to go forward. So
say,
again,
I love you.
I love you. And we love you, too, here at Priest for Life. Again, info@gospellife.com. Send me an email if you want Kevin's book or Father Pavone's book of Pro-Life Reflections. Thank you for joining us, and we'll tune in again next week for another hour of the Gospel of Life. God bless.
This has been the End Abortion Podcast. To learn more, to help end abortion, and to connect with us on social media, visit endabortion.net.